Blog Talk yep. Radio.
You are now tuned in to The Money Zone with your host, Felasha Day, the accountant for entrepreneurs.
Whoa.
The time is now.
Okay.
So we turn.
All right. I'd like to welcome you to the Brothers For Real. We are an economic empowerment show. We tell it just like it is, not like it was or what it used to be or what it's going to be. You don't have to be a brother, but you got to be real. We talk about the problems and challenges and opportunities that affect our family, our community, and the world in which we live. We take a holistic approach because we know that everything affects everything else. So we discuss politics, education, finance, health, wealth, religion, human rights, justice, technology, and whatever affects you. So tonight, as always, we're going to open up our minds, open up the lines, and let's tackle these issues. Occasionally, we're going to bring on some exciting guests. We've got the brothers here. The brothers are bring a wealth of information and a variety of topics. We have Joseph, Leon, Curtis. We have a whole slew of brothers here on the line, and these brothers bring it. I'm Robert Gatewood, and I'm your host, and we're glad welcome to another Brothers For Real radio show. I want to welcome the brothers to the studio. Welcome, Joseph, Leon, and Curtis.
Hey, what's up, Robert, how are you, man?
Right, what's up, Robert?
Hey. All right.
Hey, Robert. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, bro. All right. Well, guys, welcome to another show. I'm starting to like this thing, to tell you the truth. And
yeah,
what I like about it, when people decide to do something, you can talk about stuff all day long. You can plan and you can strategize, but sometimes you just got to go ahead and do it. You just have
That's right.
Go ahead and do it. You know what I mean? Am I right, George?
All true. When all else fails, go to work. Go to work.
I like that. Hey, how's Mom tonight, Joe?
Mom is doing great. I'm not at the house now. I was over there last night, but she's doing great.
Okay, great. Well, guys, we got a great show tonight. I just want to let the audience know some of the things we're going to talk about tonight. For instance, we're going to talk about, it's Halloween. What is it that's scary?
Yeah, what? Man. I mean, to tell you about that right quick. I need to tell you. Hey, Robert, turn your music down a little bit, man.
Oh.
Turn your music down a little bit, man. Yeah, man.
Hey, bro. Okay.
Yeah, what I was going to say is I might be talking a little low tonight because it's Halloween and I don't have any candy, man. These kids been knocking on my door.
Man, are people still
I'm
doing
home.
Halloween?
Yeah, man, they still do it in Waynesboro, man. Yeah.
Man, you gotta turn your lights out, hide your car.
Yeah, it's rough.
Man. Yeah. Hey, but
scary.
Hey,
it's scary.
I'm passing out toothbrushes and toothpaste.
You passing out what?
Toothbrushes and toothpaste.
Yeah, they're gonna spray your car, Doc.
I'm passing out business plans. The last kid.
Yeah, all y'all gonna get tricked.
Last
y'all
kid, I gave
tricked.
A business plan. He egged me. So.
Yeah,
so
y'all
I
gonna get
a good
tricked.
Idea.
Nah,
that was not a good idea. They're not feeling that. They're not feeling that.
Yeah,
kids don't want anything
get,
good for you.
So nah, I feel like y'all get tricked.
I feel like if everybody else giving them candy, they're gonna need it, these toothbrushes and toothpaste.
That's true. That's true.
Hey, that's hey, guys, true. Tell you what. I want you to think for a minute. I'm gonna get to you a little later, but I want you to later in the show. Maybe when I get through with my little thing here. I want you to tell me what scares you. I'm going to tell you what scares me. Before I do that, I'd like for the brothers to give me just a quickly just say hello to the audience. If you want to give a quick, you don't have to give your whole introduction, but anything you want to just share with the audience when we get started. Joseph.
I just want to say hello and welcome to the show. My name is Joseph Gatewood, calling out of Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right. Leon.
Yeah, man, this is Leon Gatewood, child number 11 in the Gatewood family. I'm calling out of Waynesboro, North Carolina. I want to give a quick shout-out, though, man. Livingstone College is celebrating 125 years of black college football this weekend at the Livingstone College. You know, Livingstone and John C. Smith University, which was known as Biddle University at the time, started the first black college football game. They played the first black college football game. John C. Smith came to Salisbury on horse and buggy.
When was that? Did they play? Who did they play at homecoming? Was that Smith?
They played Fayetteville State at homecoming, but this is the Black Collegiate Classic. This is a commemorative classic. That's going to be played this weekend, Saturday. This Saturday.
At Livingstone.
Are you going, Leon?
At Livingstone, yes, sir.
Okay, I'll be up there. What time does the game start?
Game starts at 1 o'clock. Everybody, be there or be square.
All right, folks. There's some history there.
That's history, man. That's serious history.
Yeah, it's serious. I know all about it. You know, I'm a history buff.
Here you are. That's fascinating.
So, yeah, I'll be up. Thank you for reminding me.
Yes, sir. I hope everybody is listening, and I'm reminding a lot of people.
All right, folks. That's Livingstone and Johnson C. Smith. It's a classic. They're the first two black teams to play. First, I guess, HBCU to play each other. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Right.
125 years ago. Man, listen to that. 125 years ago.
I think I was about 2 or 3. I was
they came in horses and buggy, man. Huh?
They weren't HBCUs back then.
Right.
They were just
right.
The colleges for the movie.
they were just BCUs up there.
Weren't they slaves back then, though? I mean, that was 125 years ago.
Almost.
It was close.
All right, guys. Reverend Curtis, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Hello, brothers. Thank you,
hey,
Rob.
Curtis.
Thank you, everybody. Joseph, Leon. I'm just still elated, rejuvenated, all excited, because I did have the opportunity to spend time at the Livingstone College homecoming. Man,
who
I arrived
with?
There on
who
that
you
Friday.
With?
Excuse me?
I said, who you with?
You ain't with this,
hey, man, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. I arrived there Friday. The class of 1982, which is the class that I spent the most of my time with, the class of 1982 had their big dance that night on Friday. Man, I was just seeing so many beautiful people. I mean, it was just like a family reunion of seeing people 40 years later. Some people I had not seen. It was the most exciting and loving and real moment. You know, when people, you know, sometimes we get caught up into this dog eat dog. Everybody trying to get the power. Everybody trying to break down somebody to get on top of somebody. But when you get to a family reunion or something like a Livingstone College homecoming or wherever you may be, and you see those real people that knew you, saw you coming up, you know, just being friends. And, you know, it's a great feeling. So, I mean, to hear one of them say, oh, man, I've been watching you, I'm proud of you, that means so much. I repeat a lot of inspiration tonight. Again, Reverend Curtis Gatewood out of Austin, North Carolina. Many of you know me with Durham and South Carolina.
That must be Curtis Thomas.
And what a mighty God we serve.
What a mighty God we serve. What a mighty God we serve. Angels bow before him. Heaven and earth adore him. What a mighty God we serve.
All right.
I was born in a 16. We often they saw teams
hey.
Spoken things. Okay.
All of the brothers, all of the brothers, thank you guys for joining tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Robert Gatewood. I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. probably better known for my radio show, The Marketing Pulpit, which comes on Radio 1 every Friday at 10:30 a.m., bringing you the good marketing gospel. We're not saving souls. We're saving businesses, saving jobs, and saving our community. It's all about economic empowerment. Today, we're talking about got a couple things on the plate. We're going to talk about what scares you. We're going to talk about this Trump investigation. Mueller is tightening the screws on Trump and company. We're going to talk about who is responsible for this disproportionate police shootings of blacks. Now, most people just say it's black and white. Is the police responsible for shooting blacks? But is there something deeper here? Is this systemic? Is this does any responsibility fall on the people who are being shot? Is it a national crisis? Is it the education system? Is it parenting? Where does most of the blame lies, but who is ultimately responsible for this disproportionate shooting of blacks by police? Is it the person that's pulling the gun, or is there some other forces at work? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about social media being the equalizer for small and minority businesses. A lot of small businesses are failing out here, and many don't have the money, the promotional dollars to do what it takes to succeed. Well, along comes social media. It's a tool that's basically free to a certain extent. Of course, you can always pay for boosting ads and so forth. But can this tool be used to turn the tide for small and minority businesses? And if we get enough time tonight, we're going to talk about why are all of these other people benefiting from these programs that are designed to help blacks and specifically and minorities in general? A lot of these programs were started with great intentions, but somehow, as always, we find ourselves on the short end, and we find other people are benefiting from programs that were supposed to right some societal and some wrongs that had been happening in the past. But once again, we're finding some of this money and some of these resources are slipping through our fingers. And who is the fault, and how can we turn that around? So, folks, we got a full plate tonight. I'm going to start off by, it is Halloween, and I know when I was a kid, I don't remember if we trick-or-treated. Did we trick-or-treat? I don't think anybody had any candy, did they? Grandpa Clyde?
Trick-or-treat. I've never been trick-or-treating in my life. Never.
I don't remember.
Some of the younger boys may have.
Yeah, I don't think anybody
I did. I put some around my eyes.
Leon and I went trick or treating with Tim Allen being Devil Flowers and some of those demo Leon.
Yeah, we went trick or treating.
If you pick cotton, you didn't trick or treat. I think that's where the line was drawn. If you want to find out the body.
Right. Y'all
have a few younger brothers here that probably did.
Yeah.
I don't know if Daniel did, but I do know Leon and I did.
Yeah, we did. We did.
I'm going to ask you boys a little later. What scared you, if anything? Now, some of you guys may be fearless, and that's fine too. But I'm going to tell you some things that should scare us all. Here are just some things to think about. Put in your fact cap tonight on this Halloween. According to a Wisconsin federal judge, 300,000 registered voters in the state lack forms of identification that the Republican legislature required to cast their ballots. That means that some forms of ID were acceptable, like gun permits, where student identifications were not. In Milwaukee County, which has a large African-American population, 60,000 fewer votes were cast in 2016 than in 2012. And it wasn't just because Hillary Clinton was the nominee. Voter suppression. In the state of North Carolina, you guys probably know about this. Trump's margin of victory, let's put it this way, the Republican Party actually sent out a press release after the election boasting about how their efforts drove down African-American turnout. That is something that should scare us all. Here's another thing that should scare us. A record 6.1 million Americans are forbidden to vote because of felony disenfranchisement, and we know that disproportionately affects people of color. Here's something else that should scare you. According to the Census Bureau, the average black median income was $36,000 compared to $62,000 for white households. 24% of blacks are living below the poverty line versus 10% of whites, and 11% of blacks are unemployed versus 5% of whites. And that does not, it doesn't matter whether you're male or female. Here's something else that should scare you. Since 1990, the suicide rate among blacks have nearly doubled. This is elementary school, elementary age black children have nearly doubled since 1990, while the suicide rates among whites have actually dropped. Suicide rates among elementary black age children have doubled, while the suicide rates among whites have fallen. That's something that should scare you if it doesn't. And here's my last thing that should scare you. African-American males die younger than any other group. Now, this is no surprise, but just something we should remind ourselves every now and then. Of course, heart disease and homicide are one of the two top causes. White females live 81 years versus 71 years for black men. That means if you're blowing a white female, you're going to live 10 years on the average more so than a black male. These are some things that really we should be, it shouldn't necessarily scare you.
There's some background noise going on.
Hello. What's going on over there? Somebody, we got a lot of talking in the background there. And if you have some background issues, just hit your mute button when you're not talking, and that way we won't pick up your noise in the background. So, brothers, I'm just going to ask you, is there anything on your mind that you think we should be concerned about? I don't want to use the word fear because I don't really believe in the fear thing, but these are some things that I think we should be concerned about. Anything on your list, Joe?
Yeah, there are all the things that you mentioned are things that I have thought about, and but all of these things are all of these things are a result of years of racism and discrimination. Mm-hmm. As I told you, in North Carolina Central, my concentration, one of my areas of concentration, was history. And history will tell us that an oppressed people, they always pick up the worst habits of their oppressors.
Yes, indeed.
And especially when you mention suicide, once upon a time, suicide, that was something you just did not associate with African Americans. That was something that we did not do. But
yeah,
for whatever reason, huh?
I think that probably shocked me and disturbed me more than anything else. That elementary age children, our young people, are killing themselves doubled since 1990. That is something that
yep.
we should really pause and think about.
Yes, that's because when we get into integration, we are systematically exposed to their worst habits, to the worst habits of our oppressors. And so whatever is going on over in the majority neighborhood, as we refer to it, it's going to eventually spill over into our neighborhood. Now, there's another thing I'd like to say also. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would just like to add that it's not happening passively. There's actually an orchestrated effort to make sure that the things that are more beneficial from the oppressor side don't find their way into our neighborhood, but the things that are detrimental do. So it's not passive. It's not by accident.
And also, there's another thing too you have to look at too. Most of these problems that we are faced with are related to economics. Just like I remember when I was working at Metropolitan Insurance Company, a white boy, we were talking about health insurance was the subject, and the white guy he's made a comment. He said, "I understand that black people don't live as long as white people." Well, my response to that was, I said, the reason for that is because of the economic disparity in the United States. I said, because economics decides your access to everything. I said, and that includes health care. I was just like,
I said, just like take you and I, for example. I said, you and I own the same job. I said, we make same income, basically. I make a little bit more. I said, but I said, we have the same access to health care. I said, you are no more healthier than I am.
Yeah.
So, economic.
You said it always comes back to the numbers, though. It always comes back to money.
And another thing, too, let me say this, Robert, and I'm going to shut up. I spoke about how history tells us that the worst habits of our oppressors are going to eventually spill over into our neighborhood. But this is what I learned in statistics. Mm-hmm. My statistics teacher, he started out by saying, he said, there are three kinds of lies. Either they are lies, they are damn lies, and statistics. And basically, and I say that to say this, because when we start talking about percentages, we have a tendency to look at, not to look at pure numbers. So if you say, for example, 10% of white people living in poverty and 30% of black people living in poverty, but in real numbers, you got more white people living in poverty. And a white baby that's starving to death, he doesn't care whether he's 10% of a group or 30% of a group. He's still hungry. But I'm done.
That's good, man. That's good stuff. And I did a show one day about how numbers lie. And you can make numbers say just about anything you want to. Leon.
Right.
You can pick anything off that list, or you can pick your own. Anything that's really causing you great concern on this Halloween, this All Hallows Eve.
Well, naturally, everything you mentioned on that list frightens me. But what frightens me the most is called some kind of, in the pool with it, is how our people don't seem to be alarmed about issues that are going on, or not aware. I mean, they are not motivated to get excited about some of the things that's going on. For instance, the thing I talked about last week about the schools, the things that are going on in the school, mm-hmm. we can't seem to get motivated to make things different, you know, make things change, you know. For instance, if you have a school that's just flipping, one of the schools that has the most benefits for our children, if it's just flipping it to be a completely almost white school, I mean, mm-hmm. we should be concerned about that. We should be going nuts about that. You know, parents should be pushing their kids in there, trying to get them into those schools. And if they're being rejected by those schools, they should be making some noise. I mean, I had one of the principals, some of them just complain, just telling me, look, man, won't y'all do something? I mean, this school is getting ready to flip, you know.
Well, Leon, those things like that
frighten me, especially when our kids are suffering so bad, you know.
And killing themselves, according to these numbers, that's crazy.
That's tough. That's scary.
That's bad news. Curly, anything on that list scared you, or do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, again, I want to echo, you brought out some strong issues that I think we all agree should be on, you know, at the forefront of our minds. But I do want to bring a perspective in a couple of things, especially as it relates to history and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, of course, Rob Joseph and others can tell you about, you know, what happened with black folk and how we came here through the worst form of oppression, of course, patent slave ships. We lost about 2 million people on the way that we don't talk about that much. And part of about 60 million probably slaves died over the course of the years because they were slaves, not because they became older or because of their natural causes or whatever. And African-Americans, Africans who were brought here and served during that period, there was so much fear and terrorism that came as a part of slavery. The terror, mm-hmm. whether it was the lynchings or whether it was the slave patrols who went around and made sure if a slave did escape, you know, they would put that slave before the whole group and show you what they would do. And it would be something that we probably couldn't even if we saw it, we'll be throwing up for the rest of our lives. But I'm trying to say there was so much mental damage and a deprivation of culture that came as a part of slavery to the African-American that, unlike the immigrants who come from, whether it be the Latinos or the Haitians or others who are coming over now, there was such a profound terror and psychological deprivation of culture, in addition to the killing that impacted the African American in a unique way. That is why I don't like the minority blanket. I don't like the people of color blanket. African Americans have an experience that no other group in America at this time could, I would say, would be parallel to the African American experience. And so, with that being said, what's so bad about, even if, like Joseph made a comment about the oppressor, how the oppressed would take up some of the worst habits or standards of the oppressor, imagine that can be multiplied a million times to an oppressed person who has been deprived of his or her culture and history.
Right.
Because that person is continuously trying to find him or herself in a society where you're not just immigrating, you're emulating, and you're trying to find yourself in a culture that is not yours. And so that is the added burden of the African-American. And when you start talking about suicide, I think one of the things that kept the African intact in spite of the oppression was their religious and spiritual power. They had a spiritual wealth that they could connect to, that we are leaving by the wayside, and allowing that void to be filled by racist evangelicals and people who are taking the Bible and twisting it. And that is causing a major problem, I think, that we can totally underestimate the spirituality or the spiritual wealth that we could use to compensate for not having the financial wealth, just like with dad and mama. We didn't know we were poor because we had the spiritual wealth and the parents that would make us believe that there was something greater than what we were experiencing, than the most powerful oppressor. We could see that there was something greater than he. But if you think that is what you have to answer to, then you lose hope. And so there is a powerful spiritual element to the African-American experience that I think we are losing in this generation, that I would suggest that we embrace ourselves to.
All right, brother. As you can see, folks, there's a lot. We have a lot. Like I say, I'm not a fear monger. I believe the fear is an emotion that really has served little purpose other than really get us off of our track and distracted. We have to turn that fear into action and to concern. Right. But we don't have any room for fear. So when I say these are things that should scare you, I'm just saying these are things that we should be concerned about. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk briefly about this Trump-Mueller situation, this investigation. Mm. And that is a big one. We're going to talk about that, guys. So hang on for a second. We're going to be right back after the break. Folks, you're listening to Brothers For Real. We're on Blog Talk Radio. The phone number, if you want to join the conversation, is 646-787-1967. I'm Robert Gate with your host. I have Joseph, Leon, and Curtis on the line. We come back, we're going to talk about Trump tightening the screws. While we're taking this break, I'm just going to throw out one more statistic. We got a lot of people talking about support your black-owned businesses. Here's some numbers that really, another number to really think about. White-owned businesses create about 55.9 million jobs, and they employ about 44% of the working-age white population. They have annual revenue of about $13 trillion. And they could literally give every white working American an annual paycheck of $102,000 a year. Let's go down the scale here to black-owned businesses. We create 1 million jobs. I mean, that's, applause for that. but it's only enough to employ 4% of the working age black population, creating about $187 billion in revenues. And if we had to start paying ourselves from the money that we generate and the businesses that we own, we could only pay the black working age Americans only $7,000 a year. That's $7,000 a year for the black-owned businesses versus $102,000 for white-owned businesses. Folks, we got a lot of work to do. We have to dig down and to find out why these numbers. We just can't throw out statistics. That's why this show is here. We're not just here to talk about it. We're going to dissect these issues and find some solutions. That's why we are the Brothers For Real. We're not just a talking group. We are think tanks. We're going to put some solutions on the table, and we have some strong minds here to tackle these topics. We will be bringing on guests, and we open up the lines to you, the listeners. If you want to join us, if you have solutions, if you want to join the discussions, then call us, 646-787-1967. That's 646-787-1967. Also, go to Brothers For Real website. We have all the shows there that we've done so far. You can listen to the show today by going to that website. You can also go to Facebook, Brothers For Real. You can go to Instagram, Brothers For Real. You can also go to Twitter, Brothers For Real. Easy to remember. You don't have to be a brother, but you do have to be real. I want to thank the brothers for joining me this evening, and you guys, your perspective is right on point. But I do want you to just listen up for a minute.
George Papadopoulos had a meeting with a London-based professor. Papadopoulos, a Trump campaign foreign policy advisor, was promised dirt on Hillary Clinton. According to court documents unsealed today, Papadopoulos admitted lying to federal authorities when he said that those contacts occurred before joining the Trump campaign. As Papadopoulos persisted to set up a meeting, the discussion reached the highest levels of the Trump campaign, with then-chairman Paul Manafort and senior aide Rick Gates emailing to say, quote, "We need someone to communicate that DT is not doing these trips. It should be someone low level in the campaign so as not to send any signal." But in July 2016, Papadopoulos said that a meeting between senior Trump officials with Putin aides, quote, had been approved from our side. Papadopoulos was arrested on July 27th and later pled guilty for knowingly and willfully making materially false statements. Today, White House officials are downplaying Papadopoulos' work with the campaign.
It was extremely limited. It was a volunteer position. He reached out and nothing happened beyond that.
But Trump himself told the Washington Post in March 2016 that Papadopoulos, seen in this photo with Trump, was on his foreign policy team.
George Papadopoulos, he's an oil and energy consultant, excellent guy.
Let me tell you, it will all be over.
I think a lot of people are singing that song.
I hope they're telling the truth, bro.
It'll all be over after a while.
I can't wait.
Let me tell you the significance of this. The Trump people, somebody's got some distortion in the background. The Trump people have been shaming since the election that there is no connection, that these guys are like outliers. They are just consultants. They are nobody actually was giving any instruction to these guys. This Papadopoulos guy, now there's some suspicion that this guy has been wired. So when they said there was some proactive involvement, in legal terms, that usually means you got a person who has really have been flipped and now they're being wired. So there's a lot of information that Trump is, that Mueller is holding close to his chest. If there was ever such a thing as a smoking gun, we're just about there. Leon, what do you think about
this? Well, here's the trip part. Now, Trump is calling this guy a liar and a lowballer and, you know, insignificant. But everybody knows, who doesn't know yet, that Trump is the liar and is the problem. So this is it. I mean, I don't know why we've been going through all this. I mean, yeah, dude.
we're going through all this because of politics, but
right.
any other day or any other person, these guys will already be locked up. So
can you imagine if this was Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton?
I can't imagine.
Yeah, well, I think I just enjoy God's exposure of the hypocrisy. I mean, while Trump is going around trying to make football players feel like they are unpatriotic for staying on their knee during the national anthem while not so-called honoring the flag, and he wanted to make that so unpatriotic, yet the key members on his team are being charged with conspiring against the United States of America, selling us out, United States of America. While he's running around talking about pledging allegiance to the flag, they're over there making deals with the enemy of the United States of America. I think that's a hypocrisy that I'm just enjoying.
You know what this does, though, and this allows white America to see what black people have seen all of our lives, how the rules change, how the rules and what is outrageous change, what's acceptable changes, what's illegal changes, what's taboo changes. There was a time when if you even spoke to a Russian, remember McCarthyism back during the McCarthy guy when they had these trials and anybody who had been accused of any type of involvement with communism or anything, they were pretty much.
You remember how they did Dr. Martin Luther King for accusing him of being a communist?
Absolutely. All of a sudden people are like, well, what's wrong with being friends with Russia? Why don't we just get along all of a sudden? Now it's right. Kumbaya time. When all of a sudden, when the tide has turned now, when we got a white supremacist in the White House, all of a sudden, being involved with the Russians is okay. And it just sickens me. It really, the hypocrisy, if nothing sickens me more than anything else in the world, it's hypocrisy.
Right.
And what we're seeing is hypocrisy just on full display. I'm just, every time I hear these people defending Trump and his group on CNN and these other shows, I mean, Fox has just become like a Trump cheerleading section. They see nothing wrong. It's all about Hillary. It's all about to do about nothing. What do you think, Joseph?
Well, there was an interesting statistic that, back to statistics here, Joe in the morning, he said that 75% of Republicans do not care that the Russians interfered in our election. 75% of Republicans do not care. Now,
racism is hard, boy.
Now we were talking about what fears, what are we afraid of now? One of the things that I'm afraid of is that Donald Trump had his finger on the nuclear button.
We're all afraid of that.
That's like a given.
Yeah. All right. But
the default fear.
It's amazing that as much as the power that be here in America, they talk of communism, but what they have done with Donald Trump, they has torn the main page out of the Communist Manifesto and played it better than Karl Marx ever dreamed it would happen. Karl Marx, in his Communist Manifesto, he said the masses of people are ignorant and they are not capable of governing themselves. Therefore, you can justify a dictator. And of course, now the United States has gone all around the world preaching democracy and giving people the right to vote. Well, the reason they have done that is because in democracy, the government is easier to be manipulated. Now we assume that we had a strong democracy. That was the assumption that we made. But keep in mind, Russia has gone all over the world interfering in elections. In Ukraine, in Switzerland, even in England. But now all of a sudden, that's okay. That's okay.
What
Trump has on all these people, you know, is beyond me. But it's obvious that they took a play out of they took a page out of the Communist Manifesto and played it, because they knew that there was a large ignorant mass out here. Donald Trump himself said if he ever ran for president, he would run as a Republican. He said, because the Republicans are stupid. He said that, and they know he did it.
He sure did. He also said, I can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and they would still vote for me. But this is the
That's right.
Here's an undercurrent a lot of people don't know about the Russian involvement. The Russians, believe it or not, this problem is bigger than Donald Trump. Really, when you look at the big picture, Donald Trump is a big player. Because the Russians have been interfering not only in the United States election, but elections, like Joseph said, all over the world. And they didn't start in 2016. But what they did, what they call people like, and Donald Trump, they're the word they use in Russia, but it means the village idiot. They knew that the only way it could plant itself in the United States, they would have to have a village idiot running the country. And they would have to have somebody who would actually buy into their program. Hillary Clinton wasn't buying into it. Barack Obama didn't buy into it. George W. Bush didn't buy into it. It was only Donald Trump that came along that was that village idiot that it took to make their plan work. And that is why we are in this situation right now, because they found their village idiot. And the people that follow him are no better than he is, because they support this village idiot. But that's the only way this plan would have worked if a Donald Trump comes along. That's why it took 2016 for the Russians to actually execute their plan that they've been really planning for years. They just didn't have a village idiot to execute it for.
Village idiot. I like that. Village idiot.
Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss, but when it's organized, it's devastating. And what the Russians were able to do is to organize the ignorance in this country.
All right, guys, we're gonna take another quick one. When we come back, we're gonna tackle these police shootings again. We're gonna look at the what's happening in the NFL. I think it was very telling what happened at Houston the other day, at the Houston football game. This guy tried to play his hand. And we saw how that worked out for him. So hang on, guys. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to Brothers For Real. We're a show, a think tank of brothers that bring a different perspective to the issues of the day. You don't have to be a brother to join us. Only thing you have to be is real. Be back in about 30 seconds.
No.
The Brothers For Real show is actually a part of the Marketing Forces family. We have 10 shows across the country. Charlotte, North Carolina, Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas, Baltimore, Maryland, New York City. Go to marketingforces.com to find out more about the different shows. And the Brothers For Real, we're glad to have the Brothers For Real on this platform. Robert Gatewood, I'm the host. I have my brother here joining me as host. We're here every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Tune in, tell somebody. Let's take this show national. Man, I remember when I was in high school. Man, Joe's with Aaron. Man, we were in the band. Man, you would tap some horse though with me.
You play that horse.
Remember that horse, Joe?
They played that horse.
Leroy and Tony Simons and what's the Ellery guy named? What's the Ellery guy who played the baritone horn?
William Ellery. I saw Leroy this weekend. I went back to see him.
Is that right?
Hey, man.
I went by to see Leroy this weekend. He said, man, can you imagine if me and William Ellaby was out there in that band, North Carolina Central? Because, by the way, we had our homecoming this weekend also.
Right.
And Leroy was saying, man, can you imagine me and William Ellaby out there in that band with them baritones? I said, boy, that would have been something. That'd have been
William
something.
Ellaby, Leroy, then I came along. They just kept passing that baritone down. Couple years at a time, there would be a new baritone player. And it was only like one baritone in the band back then. So.
Let's talk about that for just a second, man, the band, right quick, since you brought that up. Now, here's what happened. Now, all you guys were in the band, Robert, Joseph, Aaron. Mm-hmm. And then, see, back when you guys were in the band, you could borrow an instrument. Is that right?
Yeah. That's right. Faith and High School. Faith and High School and elementary school was all together back then. Provided instruments for the students.
See, when I got in the age to get in the band, the schools integrated, and I was shipped out to Waysbury Elementary School with the white folks. And see, now, then when I tried to get in the band, the guy said, you have to own an instrument. I was like, own already.
Yeah.
I said, okay, no problem. I said, I tell you what, Dan, I tried to be outsmart the man. I said, I know they're going to make me buy a big old sousaphone. I said, I want to play that big thing right there. he said, well, you have to start off on the trumpet or the clarinet.
Yeah. Right.
Walked on out. I just went on back out the door, man.
But it's
just
amazing.
Imagine the talent and that. See, that was another form, another loss in the so-called desegregation fight that we had to experience. In addition to all of the principals and teachers who knew you, Joseph, Aaron, Lillian, Evelyn, Caesar, they knew everybody when we're walking to the classroom and would tell us how smart we were. That would give us that confidence and make us feel like, oh, that we know your daddy, we know your mama, we've seen your daddy preach. When you're getting all that stuff, man, it did so much for our self-esteem, in addition to what Leon was now saying, showing you specific ways in how they were able to stop us in our tracks. In
you guys cannot.
Whether it be in music or whether it be in other things. And then that's something we don't talk about or address enough as the negative impact. We want diversity. We understand the power of diversity, but we must at some point be honest in talking about what happened with so-called desegregation.
But you know what? That is why this show, Brothers for Real, is so impactful, because we are living examples. We are old enough but young enough to have gone through segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And integration. You can draw a line down the middle. You can draw a line between Robert and Leon.
Mm-hmm.
Robert was the last one that was able to get a free instrument for band.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
you see all
the
talent we have with music. Look at Daniel. Look at myself. I mean, and we could not. We were not able to get into the band. Our father, having to emerge from being a sharecropper and all that, was not going to buy an instrument. They knew that.
Right. Right.
And I'm going to tell you something else, too. Now, I wanted to play football, and I had no idea, because going to Anson High, that was my first experience with integration. And I wanted to play football, but I got out there and found out that I had to buy my own football shoes. I knew that was the end of that. That's because I couldn't get some reason.
Can y'all imagine making money playing football, though, man?
No.
I'm gonna tell you how I practiced for the first few weeks. JC had been in the army. When I practiced football in a pair of JC's army shoes. And I had those army shoes on, and I could outrun everybody with those army shoes on. But I never got up enough courage to ask Dad to buy me a pair of football shoes, because
You know what?
Especially if you didn't have any other shoes.
Football shoes, they'd have been your only shoes. That's the thing. You'd have been wearing spikes
been
down at the church.
You've been wearing those cleats in church, the shoes, everywhere.
Joseph, why you got your football shoes on at, in the regular school room? Hey, man, that was it, dog.
I had one shot of shoes.
And the sad thing about them, you would have had to pass them down five times.
That's right. Next, me and Aaron, we'd have been in. Joseph, you would have doomed the next two brothers. I'd have been wearing some worn out cleats. I'm glad you didn't make the football team.
I'm glad.
Have had new cleats. At least you'd have had new cleats on. I'd have been wearing worn cleats.
Won't he do it? Won't God do it?
God was working. That my prayers were answered. So please don't let Joe make the football team. I ain't want to be wearing cleats 2 years old. So anyway. It's bad enough I had to wear those leather pumps that Lee and them used to wear. I was the only kid in the first grade those pan leather slingbacks, man. I'm still scarred.
You'd have been better off wearing cleats.
I'm serious now that I think about it.
Yeah, man.
But between cleats and slingbacks, I don't know, man.
You should have bought the
cleats. I should have gone for the cleats. My bad. All right, guys.
He tried giving away a pair of girl shoes at school. Them little shoes with the strap across the top. I said, Dad, I ain't going out. Like, I'm sorry.
I don't know if y'all can tell everything. That is funny right there, though.
Man, don't tell it all, man. Don't tell it all.
Strap across.
Hey, we for real, man. We gotta be for real. You said be for real.
Bro,
you gotta be
for
real.
Hey.
That's a little too real right now.
Hey, look. This was a friend of mine. This guy, his name was Robert. He was named Robert too. I was crying. I had these girl shoes on, right? And he came over to me. Now, look. Out of the mouth of a child, right? Like, he had to answer for me. He said, Robert, don't cry. Just tell your dad to buy you some boy shoes. Okay.
Like, he is talking
all.
And that
took care of that.
I tell you what, one of them
said.
Yeah.
I said it myself. I won't be seeing you in the space program. I see that right now. Not exactly rocket scientist.
Old Cecilia come walking up to me, telling me it was about November. He said, Joseph, do you know you don't wear the same clothes to school every day this year? I looked at him. I said, these are not the same clothes. I have a lot of these like this.
That same bleach mark on all of them. Oh, man.
Me and Leon, we didn't have to wear any straps. We didn't have to wear any shoes with straps on, like Leon. I did.
No, we didn't do that.
I think the worst deal we had, I might have had to wear a girl sweater. I had to explain that.
Girl sweater. I don't know why all the people that donated clothes to us gave us girl clothes. Yeah.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It was 10 boys and 4 girls, and all the clothes we got were girl clothes.
Nobody had boys. We were the only boys in town. Dang, got it. We wearing sling bats and girl sweaters and bonnets, man.
I wore one of them that had the fur right in the front.
Good.
All right, guys. Let's talk about this police accountability. Now, I'm gonna be controversial here. These folks getting shot. And this is what I'm hearing. Weren't they asking for it? Why don't they just do what the daggone police tell them what to do? Daggone it! If you put your hands up. if you keep your hands where the police can see them, won't they just let you go on home and mind your business, get on about your business? Is it that simple?
Man, I tell you, I think we talked a little bit, we hit a little bit on some of the history about the slave patrols and everything else, and, of course, how the KKK worked in coordination with the FBI, especially under J. Edgar Hoover. In fact, I get tired of all these specials about how did who killed John F. Kennedy, when we know for a fact the FBI and the J. Edgar Hoover, they were killing everybody. They were wiretapping. They were getting rid of almost every possible leader that could. If they didn't do it directly, they were wiretapping, they were setting people up, they were entrapping people, they were escalating fights, they were opening the invitation to assassination. They were doing all different types of things through FBI under J. Edgar Hoover. So a lot of this stuff about, you know, if we would just put our hands up, we have so many instances now, thank God, we do have people who can video and show mm-hmm. that the person might have had his or her hand up and the police still shot. I would say this. We often talk about diversity training with the police department and all that. The main problem I think we have in America is we've allowed the existence of one of the most vicious terrorist groups, the Ku Klux Klan, and other Nazi sympathizers or those who associate themselves as Confederates to continue operating in the country when this country, of course, supposedly, as a part of the Oath of Enlistment, talks about how they would defend the U.S. Constitution against foreign and domestic enemies. But they've often allowed the domestic enemies to exist while they're pointing their fingers over at ISIS. They're pointing their fingers over at Al-Qaeda. They're pointing their fingers over at the various other so-called foreign terrorist groups while allowing the terrorists that have terrorized and murdered and taken land from black people for the last probably 400 years to continue growing, continue rallying, continue holding recruitment events right here on the streets of America. So if you allow the world's worst terrorists to continue to exist, then of course they're going to integrate themselves into the workforce. They're going to become police officers. They're going to work in hospitals. They're going to work with food. They're going to work in all these different. They're going to sell insurance. They're going to do all these different things as they are allowed to exist as a part of society. So it's not a surprise to me that a black person will get murdered by a police officer who may have infiltrated the police department as a part of the KKK or a part of some other terrorist group. So the terrorist groups are allowed to exist because they kill black people. So since they kill black people, and this is something that we should hold all presidential candidates and other candidates accountable for, why is it that you, when you talk about terrorism, you never mention the terrorists who kill black people, who've been killing black people for the last 400 or 500 years? Why is it you don't talk about those terrorists? And if we're going to have almost $1 trillion budget to use as a defense department, why wouldn't we use some of that money to eradicate our society of the terrorists that have been killing innocent Americans who just happen to be black?
Well, Chris, I would say, the reason I posed the question the way it is, because obviously the first person you want to look at is the person with the gun and the badge who's actually – but I look at it like a relay race. You can't just celebrate the person that ran across the finish line. You got to look at all the players in the game. So there are other hands at work, as you said. There are politicians who have promoted these folks and put them in these positions. But then again, we have a society that has somehow painted black men as some demon, some animal, some subhuman species that must be eliminated. And that
right.
I think that is a bigger problem than just the guy with the gun who actually pulled the trigger. I think society is pulling the trigger. There are so many people that are involved in this. It's a conspiracy
yeah.
almost. It's like you can't say one guy shot Kennedy when you got all these other forces at work. So when the person shoots that young black man, that teenager, that woman, is, of course, the cop pulled the trigger, but what led up to that actual event?
who shot the sheriff.
Yeah, they're just participants in the institution of white supremacy. A terrorist society that drives white supremacy, and white supremacy has various components. And a lot of these, as the Bible would say, you have evil people in high places.
Well, you know, the culture of the police department has always been not to protect black people, but to control black people. That had always been the culture in the police department. When Wayne came to Charlotte in 1960, 58, or somewhere around there, he wanted to join the police department. And the first thing is, my big brother, God bless his soul, died in 2009. He wanted to join the police department. The first thing he said they told him was that if he joined the police department, he couldn't arrest any white people. The only people he could arrest were black people. And another thing, so we have to understand, first of all, that police department, if any time the police department does something to help one of us, it's incidental, but that was not the purpose. Now, and another thing what we have to understand, too, is we have to have a neighborhood quit being so quick to call the police. We'll call the police. I know a lady that called the police on a 10-year-old boy that broke her windshield. I said, now what in the world is the police going to do?
Shoot him. He better not make any false moves.
And then once the police come out there and shoot him, and then, of course, you got the whole neighborhood. Got the whole neighborhood up in arms. We need to start being keepers of our own neighborhood. We got to start being better keepers.
But see, the thing about systematic white supremacy is that it affects black and white alike.
So that's right.
We have what we have. We have what some of people might call self-hate. We have devaluing black life on every scale, whether it's black, white, Asian, Hispanic. Like everybody in the world seems to devalue black life. So when that lady calls the police on a 10-year-old, that's just another example of devaluing a black life. I mean, it's not going to hurt her to go there and talk to that kid or to bring in an adult or, you know what I'm saying? Why do we have to criminalize the most innocuous act? So I agree with you on that.
Robert, I just want to say this quickly, though. We do have an internal and an external problem. Of course, the internal things are like what Joseph's saying, but we also have to understand that, you know, and I'm sure everybody here does, the external. And sometimes we need to make sure that when we talk about the external, we also address the internal and vice versa. So Joseph was right in talking about the internal, but I often talk a lot about the external because the external, those are the people who have the money, the power, the resources that can help to create that monster. And that's why I don't even like to even refer to a black neighborhood as a hood. I'll often try to bring it back to neighborhood because you're bringing a neighbor back to it. You're bringing a love back to it. Scripturally, love your neighbor as yourself. If you take neighbor out, you're only left with hood, and it's easy to make that hoodlum. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, Leon. What do you think?
Yeah, I was just going to say, man, I guess y'all heard about, what happened in New York City today. The guy drove a truck down a bicycle trail, and he's killed 8 people. And they say he jumped out the truck with a paintball gun and a pellet gun. And that was proof enough to them that he was a terrorist and that he was wanting to get shot because he had a paintball gun and a pellet gun. But they say they shot him in the stomach. But that was a one shot, and they didn't kill him. Now
he shot him in the buttocks.
They shot him somewhere, but they say they did. You know, they didn't kill him, of course. So that's just proof that they don't have to kill you.
That's right.
I mean, you know, they don't have to kill these guys. All these guys are there shooting. I mean, you're talking about some of these guys, they have no weapons, and they shoot them 5 or 6 times. I mean, they load them up.
Yeah.
But like I say, they say this guy was a terrorist, and I don't know, you know, I hardly believe anything I hear anymore. I can't believe what I hear or see in the media anymore. But it's just proof. They don't have to do that.
But here's what they need to start doing. Every time they, every time one of these, because you notice it's always a white cop shooting a black person. It's not a black cop shooting a black person or white cop shooting a white person. It's a white cop shooting a black person. And what they need to do is profile these white cops that's shooting these black men, go into their background, go back into their family, back into where they go to church, what organizations they are, and see if there is any connection. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Connection to hate groups and everything else. The way they do, they're not going to hire ISIS to be police officers. They're going to do a background check. And I guarantee you, a foreign person applying for a job comes in with a turban over his head. They're going to start looking to try to make sure he's not a so-called terrorist because of the racist society. But they're not going to check white men to see if they belong to a terrorist group here in America. And I think if they did that, it would reduce a lot of these issues that we're dealing with. Because a lot of these things, like you said, Leon, what could make a person shoot an unarmed person 10 times unless you're just trying to kill that person?
Yeah, you definitely take some folks. Let me tell you something, folks. It takes a lot of it takes a lot out of you. Well, it should anyway. When you take somebody's life, and the fact that this happens so frequently, whatever the reason, that is a problem. Taking a life is something that should be the last. I mean, somebody should be on top of you with a gun pointing in your head before you decide to kill somebody. You are killing someone. You chose this profession to be a police, to protect and serve, not
that's
to
right.
go out here and murder. And so you're either one. Go ahead.
I just want to say,
If you're that scared, you don't need to be a police officer.
That's right.
No.
Right.
You are taking somebody's life. Go ahead, Kurt.
He feared for his life. He feared for his life. Well, everything you do in America, you walking down the street, your life is in danger. And the fact that these guys are walking around with guns on, they should understand that risk that they're taking. And they shouldn't
right.
be so. So, far as I'm concerned, you're nothing but a coward. And if you're
that's
a coward, you have no business in that job.
That's right. Robert, I just wanted to say, and you were a witness, on August 28th, we kicked off a campaign through my justice ministry that we refer to as Justice Ministration, which is the acronym for Jesus Uniting Souls to Increase Community Engagement. If they would just go to our website at justiceministration.com, that's JUSTICEMINISTRATION. In other words, it's ministration, not administration, but ministration, justiceministration.com. And, Robert, they would be able to find about an 18-point solution plan that comes from Stop Killing Us on how, and it mentions some, ironically, or well, interestingly, it mentions some of the things that they've already heard about the vetting process, about de-escalation rather than escalation. A lot of the things that we mentioned tonight are part of those 18 points. I guarantee you any group who's serious about a police accountability, when they look at those 18 points, they will know right away that that is something that we must unite around, that is something we should fight for. When we ask the football players to kneel, when they're talking about police accountability, there should be a plan or an outline agenda that should say, when we get these 18 things, then we will start, the protest will be over. But if we are not going to have specifics when we protest, it's going to be very difficult to know when we are winning. So I would suggest that all people who are interested in police accountability to check out our website at justiceministration.com and click on Stop Killing Us.
Yeah, and I can't overemphasize, stop calling the police so much. Stop calling. You call the police out there, what do you think he's going to do, come out there and kiss them?
Let me say this. I'm going to say this to America. America, you should be thankful that, and this is not to pat the brothers for real on the back, this is to pat America, black America on the back, that 99.9% of black people who are offering solutions to the problems that we see in this country, to the injustices that we see, And if we say we're seeing injustice, we're not just making this up. We're not just creating this. We actually see this. We feel this. We endure it. America, you should be saying thank you that people are offering nonviolent solutions. Nobody is saying burn anything down. Nobody is saying go shoot police. Nobody is saying do anything other than let's find some solutions. I looked at Curtis's SKU, his 18 points. I didn't see violence in there anywhere. I didn't see shut down the government anywhere. Everything in there was saying, let's look at this problem and let's try to work out some type of solution. So, America,
that's right.
You got to start paying attention to people. When the guy's out on the football field taking a knee, a respectful pose, who's not burning down anything, he's not swearing, he's not burning the flag, he's taking a respectful pose of protest. Be thankful that that is our approach.
Which the Constitution allows for, by the way.
Yes.
Exactly. First Amendment.
I mean, this is this is what really sometimes puzzles the heck out of me. What do you want people to do? I mean, if you beat them, you kill them, you deny them opportunity, you don't give them jobs, you don't give them loans, you won't let them vote. And then when they try to protest in a respectful, peaceable way, that's not good enough either. You call them prisoners. You call them thugs. You call them convicts. The convicts are running the prison. Think about it, America. We are looking for solutions. That's why Brothers for Real, we come to this forum. We try to dissect some of these problems. We try to offer solutions. And we invite people to join the discussion. If you have a different opinion, we're open to it. But
right. If a police chief wants to get on the call, and defend some of this stuff, we would be more than happy to have a police officer or whomever who would like to tell us why they think it's necessary to shoot an unarmed person 10 times.
Right.
And if you escape, and stay and go find another job.
You scared? Right. Don't be a police. That's pretty simple.
You're scared of somebody. You're going to get another job. Go work at a pet shop.
You're
a coward. You're a coward.
No,
you
don't work at no pet shop, man. Tear a rabbit's head off.
Like you said last time, Leon.
Sell vacuum cleaners or something.
Like you said last time, Leon. A bad person, when they're bad, they're bad. That means they're going to go home, they're going to beat their wife, they're going to stomp their dog. A bad person is a bad person.
And that's why we must have a vetting process, Robin. That is one of the points on our 18 points. There must be a vetting process. There must be a continuing evaluation of a police's state of mind. Is he suffering from trauma? Is this a veteran who might have had some other issues as a part of being a veteran? We need to start doing better vetting of the police officers that we have on the force.
And I tell you something else they can stop using black images for target practice.
Exactly.
That's right. There's a lot we can do, folks.
They're doing that. All right, they do that.
Folks, we have come to the end of another show of Brothers for Real. We did have a couple of topics we're still on the table. We'll get to those next week. We're going to talk some more about business. We're going to talk about some of these programs that are out here. We're always going to keep you informed of what's happening on the news. Folks, we are a think tank. We're not here to push our own agendas. Of course, we have our opinions, but that's just it. These are our opinions. We'd like to hear yours. By all means, join us. Call us. Tell us what's on your mind. Join the Brothers for Real. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. This is the Brothers for Real. Go to brothersforreal.com. You can hear this show and any of the past shows we've talked about the last couple of weeks. This is our third show. We kicked this off on October 17th. We'll be back next week. I want to say goodbye to Joseph. Joseph, any parting words?
Keep the faith, baby.
All right, Leon.
Yeah, man, we'll see y'all at the game Saturday, man. I hope everybody come out to the Commemorative Classic at Livingstone College at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Livingstone University, John C. Smith University, 125 years.
I might surprise y'all. Curtis.
Yes, again, check us out at justiceadministration.com because we're here to make sure that we engage in the community. We're not just going to keep preaching about life after death, but we want to make sure that you don't catch tail while you're alive right now.
Robert, you're also on the game.
Saturday, Robert.
Hey, man, I might surprise y'all, man. Shoot. I wouldn't come this past weekend, man. I was involved in this project, but hey, what time is the game?
1 o'clock.
Thank you. Where's it going to be?
Send the Mojays down.